heart and soul of a nation, beckons the call. The voice of our forefathers heard in the distance.
A house divided against itself cannot stand.
To reclaim our honor.
Our soul. The challenges of a generation call out. Future generations hang in the balance. We choose liberty. This is the voice of a nation.
The nation.
And now, Malcolm.
Let's face it, unless it's a personal experience we've encountered in our own lives, it's easy to push it off and say, yeah, the hell with that. It's somebody else's problem, not mine, right? I mean, that's the way it works a lot. And a lot of people won't admit that, but it is very true. How do you transform a nation? Well, let me spell that out for you today, friends. You transform a nation through transnational cartels and gangs. You do that where you have unprotected borders. You allow people to come in at will through thousands of miles of border, not just the southern border, but the northern border. You put a statue up in the harbor and you tell everybody that you'll take on the huddled masses and the poor. And again, the lowest possible denominator, because that's the way you're supposed to do it. That's what the game plan here is, correct? It's what even the Pope comes out and says, yeah, we need to be Christian-like. We need to lay down our borders, our arms, and just let everybody come in. Of course, these are the same people who should be on the fight of good versus evil. They should be on the good fight, but oftentimes you have to really try to rationalize the irrational. You know, in this fight of good versus evil, there are days I think we're winning and there are days I think we're losing. When you start to look at the borders and you look at our immigration problems here in this country, you can see there's an ignorance. There's an ignorance with the political elites who continue to use this as a game. Now, maybe they use it as a game because they think America is mighty and can outlast, or that America is invincible. And I think a lot of Americans think that as well, that America is invincible. And they think that, nah, nothing's going to harm this country. We're the greatest. We're the best. We are American exceptionalism after all. And maybe that's what they're thinking. Or maybe they just have evil thoughts. Or maybe they just want to win the next election. Or maybe it's for their own greed and prosperity. Or maybe they don't give a damn. Or maybe they're part of the evil cause. Whatever it is, people, the nation is being transformed. And we've seen this play out. This is not the first act. We've seen this around the world. We've reported on this. We've talked about this. We've discussed this in what's taken place in Europe. I mean, America doesn't have to look real far and real hard and real long to see where this problem comes from. We've seen the transformation of countries and nations. In fact, just the other day, we had IQ Al Razzouli on the program and talked about how Europe has gone through this metamorphosis, but yet actually how he sees a bit of encouragement, because he sees that Europe has, they got to a very low point and then realized they need to do something about it. So they've started to put those borders back up and those walls and those armed guards and even barbed wire fences and things that, you know, you just won't do here because the statue in the harbor doesn't allow us to do that, right? Because America is supposed to lie down and let anybody come in and do what they want to do. And that's the vision that a lot of people have in political circles of America. Certainly the left has that as a vision in America. And some of the right does as well. And they've ignored this immigration problem for years. It's a problem that's been building for years. These things don't happen quickly. They don't happen overnight. They don't brew quickly enough. They come over years and years and years, people, until finally you look out the window of your home and you realize we have a problem. You know, back to what I say, when does this become a problem for you and I? I mean, it's not impacting me personally at the moment. You know, they haven't entered into my neighborhood. They're not on my doors. They're not banging on my door yet. They're not, you know, I'm not tripping over them yet. So should I just ignore it and turn away and wait till it really hits my personal home? Maybe. I think that's what a lot of people do. They wait till it's an impact on their own personal lives. we tend to have that sense here, that sensibility that it doesn't really matter until it matters. That's the way I see it. I see that with a lot of problems. Why? Because we're not proactive. We're reactive. We wait for the problem to exist, and then we recognize we have a problem, and we try to then move on that problem. And maybe that's what the political elite are banking on, that American will and exceptionalism will come to battle as they destroy the country. Potentially, possibly, that's it, maybe. But they clearly have to know, people, that they're transforming a nation. They have to know what's going on. These people are not idiots. I mean, they have some kind of an IQ, don't they? I mean, they're coerced their districts and their constituents into voting for them to get into office. They must have something, some level of intelligence. So they have to know. So then if we can rule that out right away, then we've got to come to the fact that it's evil. They've got to be doing something that is evil, or again, the next election, or yeah, there's so many different ways to look at this, I'll tell you. But the one thing that way we do all need to look at it is that this country is being changed forever. And it's something we've been talking about here consistently. Now, the problems are not just with Central America. The problems are that people from all over the world have gotten our message. They've seen our brand. They know about our statue in the harbor. They know the left is insane. And they know that our political elites are dumb politicians. I guess no other way to say that, is there? They're dumb politicians. And so that we've been branded, people. You know what a brand is, don't you? Well, we've been branded. We've been branded as the world's fool. We are the world's fool. And that's what that all stands for, that lady in the harbor. I just, you know, they've hijacked that whole symbolic measure of America and what America was. Well, the problem now is not only are we getting mass numbers and records of immigration that are going to change your world, whether they end up on your doorstep or in your neighborhood or in your home, they're going to change your world because they're changing the economics. They're changing the footprints and the layout of this country. And you have to remember, a lot of these people, they don't want to assimilate. They want to bring their national values. They want to bring their belief system with them. They want to set up their communities in America. And that's what they're doing. They're doing it in Minnesota. They're doing it in Milwaukee. They're doing it in Portland, Maine. They're doing it in Texas. They're doing it in Houston. They're doing it throughout the country. These are not just border states and cities and towns we're talking about here, people. Get that through your head. This is coming to a city and town near you. Now, why can't people understand this? And why can't the left understand this? And why can't the people who voted for the left understand this? And why can't those Americans understand this? I mean, this isn't a stretch. This isn't hard to figure out. I mean, there are people you and I know. We have friends that are on the left. We absolutely do. We have Democratic friends. I have them. You have them. But why can't they understand this discussion? Maybe there's another way we need to talk to them to get through. As I always say to you, invite them to this program. Invite them to A Voice of a Nation, please. Those are the people I want to have tune in here. When we can accomplish that, we've accomplished something. Please send out a few invites today to your Democratic friends and invite them to A Voice of a Nation. Tell them it's a program of reason and a show of compassion and a show of intelligence and a conversation where they'll learn something. One that doesn't play with political boundaries. Tell them that, please. So the cartels and illegal immigration now is in full throttle in the country here. And this is one of the biggest threats to our public safety that you're going to have. There's no other bigger threat to your public safety right now than this. And again, you don't have to be doing drugs personally to understand that drugs will impact all of our lives, because the drugs and the drug cartels are, they're record numbers and they're being littered. And you're seeing these busts happen all the day. Every day, every other day, you're seeing another major bust somewhere and a huge amount of drugs, billions of dollars that are being seized when they can find them. The problem is, think about how many drugs are not being found. How many are not being discovered by the authorities? How many get into the fabric of America? And of course, that is going to change the fabric of America forever. And maybe then you ask yourself, why are the politicians wanting to legalize all the drugs? Can you figure that one out, or do you want me to tell you? Let's ask our friends on the left why that is. Do we want an unlawful society where drugs are free and available to everybody? All kinds of drugs. You can just go to your local 7-Eleven and buy some drugs. Just show your ID that you're of age at the moment. Of course, that may change as well at some point. And we'll just get everybody high and happy. It's easier to transform the nation if people are out of their freaking minds, right? Sure. And we're not enforcing our laws right now. It's not about not having laws. We're just simply not enforcing them. Our immigration laws are a joke. And again, the problem is well beyond Mexico. They're coming from around the world. One of the latest crises is coming from Central Africa. Central Africa. That's where a lot of these, there's major movements of migrant activity coming from Africa now, because they also got the brand. They also got the message. They got the rallying call that America is open for business. And they're coming in, and they're trying to get to areas like I mentioned, Portland, Maine. There was an article just the other day in the New York Times, which lays out a very compelling case. And they list two markets, two American markets that are a couple of thousand miles away. San Antonio, Texas, and Portland, Maine, and that these communities, although they're 2,000 miles plus away, they've become very attractive to the Central African population, and they're coming in by the tens of thousands wanting to get to these markets. So again, that's been put out on the streets back there in their homeland, and people are saying, you know, come to America. That's where we're at. And of course, Portland is having such a problem in Maine. They're grasping with this thing. I mean, they're having to open up massive shelters, emergency shelters. Their assistance funds are depleted. They don't know what to do there. And officials in both cities are constantly trying to tell the public, tell the people, the citizens, the community, that, you know, that these fears of an Ebola outbreak, they're trying to convince them they're unfounded. Why, again, that's a problem coming from a lot of these countries. You've got disease and medical problems. The drugs don't get you. The disease and the medical situation is, because that's another problem. And we're seeing that all along the border and throughout these cities that they're migrating to across America. So there is this transformation happening in America. And for those of us who live not on the border, but throughout the country, I think a lot of people have turned the channel off and think it's not really going to impact them, because people are very short-sighted and they don't think it's going to impact their life at all. And I think that's a problem for the border. I don't live in New Mexico. I don't live in Texas. I don't live in Southern California, so I don't really give a rat's ass. That's what a lot of people think. But as I just pointed out to you, you don't have to live in those communities, people. It's happening all over the country. And so I think we need to all step back a minute and understand what's going on. And we need our Democratic friends as well. We need them to understand, because they have children. They have families. They have jobs, right? They're worried about the economy. They have to make the house payment, the car payment, right? So why is it they support these people who want to transform America? I think that's a reasonable question. I think they've become part of the brand of the statue in the harbor. I think they've become brainwashed to think that America is supposed to do that. But people, that'll be the end of America if we continue down this path. And that's the path we seem to be on right this moment. This is the problem of our generation, by far. And that's why you've seen it accelerate through the Trump administration now. But this problem has been coming on for years. This was happening through the Bush and Obama years. They've all dealt with immigration problems in their own ways. It's just got to a feverish point now, because the brand is well noted and it's out there. And so people have figured that America is open for business. And they also know that America is a compassionate country. We have welfare laws and rules and that aid everybody, no matter what. And that, and hence, is where the problem is, friends. Mass migration, it plays a crucial role in the process of fundamentally transforming this country. It will change our political, social, economic, and our civilization as a whole as we know it. The question now becomes is, how do we change that? How do we turn that back to save the America we love?
Listen to Malcolm, the Voice of a Nation, on iHeartRadio or our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Okay, welcome on, please, here, Dr. Steven Steinlight. Dr. Steinlight is a senior policy analyst at the Center for Immigration Studies in Washington, D.C. He is always a go-to person when it comes to these kinds of challenges. And we've talked over the years, Dr. Steinlight and I have. And as I said to him coming on here, we've talked at 35,000 feet plenty of times. We've discussed our immigration problems. We've talked about where this country is. And if you go back a few years and you even play some of those recordings, by the way, you'll be interested to know that Dr. Steinlight pointed out often the problems we're having right now are many of the problems he talked about years ago. And they're problems with one of the things that really a lot of people fail to see is the economics of this, how the basic economics are going to pull the country down, and they're going to hurt you and your family because they're going to hurt your communities. But here's the thing. Stephen, I find that I really believe that people don't worry about this stuff until it hits them personally. I just think that's the way people are built, and they tend to be able to easily turn this off and thinking it's somebody else's problem. And until that is in their neighborhood, in their home, or has impacted them in some personal way, I think it's relatively easy for people to ignore this problem and think it doesn't exist. Do you agree with that statement?
Malcolm, I agree with it completely. And I think the reason, first of all, is what you described, and that is, you know, human nature. We like to believe that, the problems are going to affect someone else. It's not going to be our problem. For us, it's just an abstraction. But if you think that, I think that you're not understanding the way in which the views of all of us are shaped consciously or unconsciously by the larger forces that issue the messages, that do the messaging in our society. So, for example, the entire mainstream media, all of it, is in support of open borders. Strongly advise people to get online. The New York Times had 22 Democrat candidates running for president. And it threw 18 questions at them. They had very little time to answer. I mean, nanoseconds. But in many ways, respects, when you really have to focus, it's very revealing. And they asked, one of the questions was, is illegal immigration a problem? And no one described it as a problem. It was characterized either as an invention of Trump or as an opportunity for the United States to seize, mm-hmm. or a humanitarian failure of the United States. But no one said anything that suggests a deeper understanding of the implications. Now, these people are not stupid. And so some of them are, but the ones who are not stupid, they are really, and this is, by the way, true, unfortunately, of the political class as a whole. This is also true of the Republican Party. You know, the president is really, you know, he's not a classic Republican. He's a populist. The political class, as it were, whether it's in the United States or in Europe, is pretending this isn't a problem. Meanwhile, as Malcolm was saying, and again, I couldn't agree more, the largest and most influential reality out there in the world is the global movement of the poor, uneducated South to the global North. And the global North, of course, in our neck of the woods is America. And across the ocean, it's Europe. Europe from Italy to Hungary. the global South is trying to get in because they want the goodies. They want, you know, look, it's not hard to understand from their perspective. I can understand their motivations, but that doesn't mean that we have to commit suicide to accommodate them.
The biggest thing you bring up there, you do so well, and is the fact of the ignorance when you mention the article, but we're talking about the ignorance of people, or then you question, are they stupid? And we talk about this in terms not to be funny, but to really understand the rational argument here of what we're speaking about. And you know, Stephen, I wonder what comes to my mind initially is how do we get through to these people? They're obviously being those who are smart enough to know, and I got to believe that most can understand these basic things. They're being brainwashed, evidently, from this political class. And the political class, that's another argument. We'll talk about them in a moment here. But let's talk about the people. How is it, do you think, they're being so brainwashed? What and how do we get through to these people? How do God-loving barren Americans and conservatives like all of us, how do we get through to these people to convince them of the danger we're in?
Well, I think, you know, one way, of course, is to present them with the scale, the simple scale of what's happened in terms of the numbers, which are jaw-dropping. But also, the American people, you know, who I know because I've traveled across this country for 15 years talking about this issue just about every place you can imagine. American people are basically very kind, very, very, very warm-hearted. And what's happened is the messengers, the message senders from the government, from the media, tell them that if they object to what's going on, they are racists and they are xenophobes and they're haters. And so they're afraid even to speak out about this. Which is why, by the way, if you permit me a footnote, I know, for example, the polls about where Trump stands are totally false because people are afraid to say they support him. This was, by the way, how the media, how the pollsters fooled themselves last time around. And I'm looking at wonderment at how they're coming up with figures. A great many of Trump's supporters, because he has been vilified like this, don't want to come out of the closet.
It's even more than that, okay? And I've been talking about these polls, so I understand where you're going with this. I want people to think about how ridiculous this is, what we're talking about here. And just think of the common sense here. Now, you take a look at the kind of crowds that President Trump pulls in at his rallies. And it doesn't matter what city or town he has these in, Stephen. Mm-hmm. We're talking from sea to shining sea, okay? He can pick whatever, Pobunk, Illinois. It doesn't matter where it is. And he can get, like, the crowds will come out of, and they'll be on the rafters. Now, there is not another candidate around. No, even their most popular candidate, whoever that might be, or their most well-known candidate, whoever that may be, who can draw anywhere near those crowds. It's the
Absolutely.
Same reason why those
people... The enthusiasm level couldn't be more different.
And they can't even raise the kinds of dollars. This man raises $25 million in a 24-hour period because people are electrified at this candidacy, clearly. And I'm getting reports in from a lot of people who believe that 2020 is not going to be a close race. I mean, they're predicting that Trump will run away with it. And now, that's not to put that out there so people think they don't have to do anything. That's not the point here. But the point is, here's what I want you to take away from what we're talking about right now. They are so disingenuous, the media and the political heads. They are lying through their teeth. And for them to throw out those polls, Stephen, and to get anybody to think that they think they're throwing anything close to being honest, they know full well what they're doing. What they're doing right now, these are Hail Mary passes because they know they're in trouble. They know they're screwed. They know they're going down because they know they have a bunch of people that on the left that are embracing things like, again, killing kids at birth, doing things like open borders and let the crime and the drugs come in. I mean, it's a very radical way of thinking here of life. And any decent civilized American or Democrat or Blue Dog or anybody on the leftist side of it has got to see that.
Absolutely. I mean, there's no one. There is no one in that entire pack who could be, with any respect, called a moderate. These are all very radical candidates.
Yes. And that's what we got here. So if you look at that argument, Stephen, and what they're putting out there, then you realize that anybody has got to know that if you're paying attention to polls, and you know, Stephen, I don't care whether you turn on the MS's or the CNN or the Fox or the ABC News.
It's all garbage.
They're all garbage. And Stephen, they're all using polls. And Stephen, here's the other thing that I just want to scream at. When you turn those programs on, and let's just take Fox, because a lot of conservatives think Fox is the cat's ass, and I think it's a bunch of garbage. But here's the thing. You turn on the channel, Stephen, and if I, the latest poll is President Trump is down 14 points. Joe Biden is kicking his ass from thing to thing. What do you think about that, people? And, of course, that brainwashes into the people. Somebody said to me the other day, Stephen, I swear to you, they said to me, they turned over to me and they said to me, President Trump is really down by that much? Why is Biden beating him like this? I don't understand what's happening, Malcolm. Give me some answers. And they really said that to me.
Here we
and
I looked at them and I said, "You're away."
I said, "Are you asking me that question? Is that a real question?" And that was it, buddy. That's what they said. They asked me the question. And so I got to convince people. And these are people who should know what's going on, Stephen. So then what? Where are we?
Again, I mean, where this is a really tough thing. Where, unless people are, as it were, very independent-minded, mm-hmm. and go to independent sources,
that's right.
and kind of work on things themselves, the main narratives, yeah. that are out there say mass immigration is a great thing. Diversity for its own sake is to be worshipped. Bringing in tens of millions of uneducated, unskilled people is somehow going to make the economy grow. Bringing in people who have ideologies that are subversive to our own, that's not a problem. I mean, look, this is madness. This is really madness. And I don't want to keep focusing on the election. I want to get back to immigration per se, but
right.
this coming election couldn't be more important. If the mm-hmm. Democrats win this election, mm-hmm. The country that you know is going to start disappearing at a rate. It's been disappearing since 1965.
Well, it's going to accelerate. It's going to accelerate.
Accelerate beyond anything we can imagine.
It's what you're saying. And I can't disagree with, I mean, we all agree with you on that point. Let me ask you this big question here. And let's people understand, because your answer to this will be important. Listen to how Dr. Steinlight answers this question, people. So, Dr. Steinlight, who benefits with open borders? Tell me who benefits, please.
Well, immigration is a zero-sum game. There are winners and there are losers. The only beneficiaries are the employers of cheap labor. That's it. The American, what's going on right now is that immigrants, legal or illegal, who, by the way, have across the board, we can get into the data, but I'll just give the generalization. Mostly don't have anything more than a ninth grade education. Many are illiterate in English, even say in Spanish. They come into this country and they work for very, very low wages. They drive wages down. And the employer benefits. The American tax, with the American working class, and Americans who are our most vulnerable people, working poor, working class, old folks who can't afford to retire, they're screwed. They are screwed by this. And does it contribute to the economy? No, of course not. Because these people don't make enough in wages to pay the taxes required to support the welfare programs. Let me underscore this. The welfare programs on which 3/4 of immigrant families live. Now, imagine this, okay? You know, when the great waves came from Europe, okay? People, a lot of people out there, your grandparents, your great-grandparents, in my case, my own dad, okay? When they came, there wasn't any welfare. They had to make it on their own. They didn't come to America for a free ride. Well, 1935, welfare was, immigration, by the way, was cut off. Mass immigration was stopped in this country for 40 years in 1924. We cut it off. In 1965, it was resumed. But in the meantime, in 1934, with old age pensions, welfare began. And of course, it accelerated massively under Johnson and under others. So people come to the country for a free ride, and also, and I don't want to be totally unkind. Look, there are a lot of poor, hardworking folks who want to come here and want to make some more money. And, you know, my heart goes out to them. But they are directly competing with my fellow citizens. And I think, friends out there, it comes down to this. Does your civic morality place your fellow citizen above the illegal alien who stole into the country last night? Don't we have a sense of a common bond as Americans that say, the fate of my fellow citizen is what matters most? And I can show you a lot of passages in both the New Testament and the Hebrew Bible that say, yes, your kinsman, your countryman, your fellow, that person is the one that comes first. That's not suggesting we shouldn't care about anybody else. We have a first priority for those people closest to us. And this immigration scheme is inverting that completely. We're sacrificing Americans for the sake of cheap labor, enriching a smallish number of folks.
And what Dr. Steinlecht puts out there is critically important, because we cannot take care of our own. Our cities are being gutted out, is what's happening. And we're losing control, people, of our urban markets. Those great American cities are going away. I mean, when's the last time you have visited to any of those great cities? Have you been to LA or San Francisco, people? Have you been to Portland? Any of the cities? Go to Chicago. It doesn't matter what city you pick, people. You can go to Miami. Same thing. They're all over the East Coast as well. They're being transformed, and the homelessness is massive. And they're coming to smaller communities too now, because there's an overflow. See, this is how it starts to creep into your life. It starts with the big cities, and that's when you turn the other way, because they didn't, you know that old saying, right? They didn't come for you. And so you look the other way. And then I heard them close by in the cities, but I turned the other way. And then I heard them in the towns even closer, but it still wasn't a problem for me. I turned the other way. I then heard them in the next neighborhood, and I thought, yeah, but that's okay. My neighborhood is safe. And then when I found them in my neighborhood, I thought, oh, hell, I better put a double lock on the door. And then finally they were in the house, and I knew I was screwed.
Our global experts are brilliant writers and engaging hosts on a mission of a lifetime. You'll find the latest news and inspiration on the front page of AmericaOutloud.com.
Pat Boone here for the folks at Swiss America. Rock-solid foundations are vital in life, in business, and in finance, because in the end, only what we've built on a firm foundation will withstand the storms of life. Today, the economic storms are raging, and the foundations of everything are being tested. The world economy has never looked shakier, and gold, the world's oldest and most trusted form of money, is also grabbing headlines. Now is the time to put your future on a rock-solid foundation. Swiss America will help you create an indestructible asset today. Discover the timeless truth about gold and silver by calling Swiss America or visiting online at SwissAmerica.com.
800-978-3901. Once again, that's 800-978-3901.
You know, in the United States, the state of California has been changing dramatically, and it's a hell of an example of where America is headed. If you like all of these radical programs, that is a prime example to look at. If you're a centrist, if you're a Republican, if you are any conservative-minded person, you are not going to win a statewide race in the state of California. You would have a better chance of playing a national lottery and winning that than you would the race in California. That's how much it's changed, people. You cannot win in a statewide race there right now. Now, maybe in a local community in Orange County or some other little area where you might be able to do something, but not in the widespread part of it here. And so in California, this change I'm talking about here, just recently, Victor Davis Hanson, you've seen him on some of the television programs, a great author. He writes that California now ranks 49th out of 50 states in the number of residents who have finished high school. Now think about that, people. On public tests, California ranks 45th out of 50. One in three of the federal, state, and local welfare recipients in the United States lives in California. 20% of the state lives below the poverty level. The homelessness problem from city to city to city is out of control. The result of the perpetual mass migration of low-skilled, uneducated people is tipping this political, economic, cultural system into the trash quickly, people. That people are not assimilating, and they are looking for the handouts, and that's the brand we put on there. Let's bring in again here Dr. Steven Steinleit, again, senior policy analyst at the Center for Immigration Studies here in Washington, D.C. I want to talk a minute about these communities in America, how they're being transformed. We hear what's going on. We've referenced the New York Times article and what was happening in Portland, Maine, San Antonio, Texas, Minnesota, Milwaukee, Illinois, the cities and the communities that are being transformed. This is not a border state problem. It's a problem for the whole country.
Absolutely.
Talk to that point, please, about this transformation of our nation and the dangers that people should understand of their cities and towns that they live in. Stephen.
Well, first of all, and this, you know, I can just use one more piece, one more stat out of California because it's pertinent. California now has the greatest income disparity in the entire country. That is to say, the haves and have-nots are more radically divided, more distant from each other than anywhere else. I've got to tell you, that is not a good recipe for social peace. You've got a state with such a disparity in wealth that you're setting up a pre-revolutionary condition. And the people who've come in, great majority, legal or illegal, from Mexico, many of them regard this as Reconquista, that California was Mexican. We're taking it back. So this golden state we all look to as the harbinger of the future is... Well, when you talked about its education system and you quoted Victor Hansen, who's one of my heroes, that stuff really comes home very, very powerfully. It's affecting everything. And some of it, by the way, is very pointed. Let me give an example. When I can't help myself by saying that I believe in this case, President Obama gave a big middle finger, pardon the expression, to white dominant America, which he's never, of course, liked very much. Why was it that when he brought in all of those Somali refugees, and by the way, why is it that the United States, of all places in the world, was determined to be a place to receive hundreds of thousands of Somalis? That, you know who decides that? The UN High Commission on Refugees. We don't even decide who comes in as a refugee, except, of course, now those people claiming status who are illegally entering. But groups that are designated officially to come to this country go from that wonderful institution, the United Nations, one of the most corrupt, vile institutions, anti-American institutions in the world. Somalia is a country with radical Islamists, with a civil war that's gone on. You all know about Black Hawk Down. That was in Somalia, okay?
Well, that's why we have Representative Omar and Representative Tlaib right now.
And you've got Representative Omar. She is the voice of Somali culture. That voice is anti-Christian, anti-Jewish, anti-American, and it's, you know, coming right out. She just the other day came out to mourn the death of Morsi, of the Muslim Brotherhood leader who General Sisi got rid of in Egypt, who said in a tape, the Jews are the descendants of monkeys and apes. I mean, this is a man she's mourning, but this is what we're importing. Now, I can imagine Obama, you know, quite frankly, it's almost comical, looking around in America at the map of America and says, oh, let me find a really white part of America. So the Twin Cities, long, long history, St. Paul, Catholic and conservative, Minneapolis, Scandinavian, and more liberal, but pretty much historically white communities. I'll send 100,000 Somalis there and see how they like it. Maine, where I have spent many a holiday, a very small estate, a very low population, very traditional population. Let's see what happens. I'll send 50,000 Somalis to Maine. By the way, no adequate preparation is given to the communities where these people are sent. There are a number of organizations, I would call them very corrupt organizations. They're called VOLADs, voluntary organizations. These are all, by the way, religiously affiliated. Catholic Charities, there's a Jewish organization called the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, Protestant Welfare Group, but they're all lefty organizations, and in fact, very leftist organizations. They get a lot of money. They're not charities. They get a lot of money to supposedly acculturate these people coming into a community. And by the way, I shouldn't say coming in, overwhelming communities. They get these contracts for 3 months. They can't even begin to do the job, and then they leave and say to the local leadership in that community, it's your problem now, bye. Well, is this any way to run a country? Well, the answer is no. And this struck me as an example of a kind of racial vindictiveness and cultural vindictiveness. But we're seeing it, we're seeing the same thing. Even if there's not, as it were, a plan behind it, I'm now focusing not on refugees that the UN is sending. We know what the UN is about. We know how much we're hated there. But I'm looking at our porous borders and the utter inadequacy of our enforcement regime. And that enforcement regime has been literally destroyed by two forces: a judiciary that is out of control, and Congress, which refuses to do anything. They will moan and carry on about the inhumanity, or as OAC says, we've made concentration camps. I mean, talk about an immoral, foul comparison. Concentration camps we have, but Congress doesn't send any money to fix the problem. We don't have the money to fix this problem. So, the Senate just voted a day ago, the pertinent committee, nearly $5 billion, about 3.3 is just for quote unquote humanitarian aid. That is, I assume, to build more adequate detention resources. But in terms of enforcement, just about nothing. I mean, if I could go on with just for another moment, the other day, the president made a statement, I think, by the way, an ill-advised one, when he said, we're going to be deporting, millions of people. Well, first of all, if you're going to do it, don't broadcast it in advance. just do it. Remember how angry he got at the mayor of, was it Oakland? Because she tipped off the locals. Yep. So he tipped off the whole population.
Yeah.
I mean, look, this was the president, we know, braggadocio is one of his qualities. But, we have ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, the agency, the guys who are trained, in essence, the SWAT team guys who would be handling this. You know how many we've got? We have 6,000 for the whole country. That's insanity. If we wanted to get our immigration thing under control, that agency should be tenfold. There should be a tenfold increase in ICE agents. There is no way they could possibly do this job. So when the president comes out and says, I want to get rid of these folks, look, I mean, I sympathize. We've got essentially all of those families who came into the country basically because we couldn't put them anywhere in 2017, who were either given hearings to come back for or temporarily paroled, they've all disappeared. That's well over a million people. Those are the people he wants to remove. That's terrific, but it's going to be like looking for a needle in a haystack with 6,000 people to do it. You can't. I mean, I have more respect than I can begin to say for ICE agents, but they're up against an impossible. It's an indication of what's wrong with the whole political construct, that our enforcement agencies have been so gutted, are so inadequate, because we haven't taken this seriously. and Congress refuses to take it seriously.
Yeah, that's right. That's well said. And no, they're not taking it seriously at all. You know, the United Nations you mentioned there, Stephen, is I think a lot of people too need to understand that what we're talking about here right now is the spark, if you will, Stephen. I think you would agree with this, of this globalistic movement that's taken place here. There are a lot of people who want a global unity. They're looking. It's really becomes a one world government sort of thing. You know, for years, Stephen, I used to think that was a lot of hogwash and a conspiracy. I didn't really subscribe to the theory, you know, as much. And as you start to look more about what these people are doing, we did a program the other day about George Soros on Viewpoint that was quite fascinating. Then you begin to realize what these people are up to. But do you agree with that statement? I mean, this is really the spark of a globalist movement.
Oh, Malcolm, there's no question. Okay. And by the way, I would also say in that, curiously, there lies a hope. And that is, mm-hmm. I think the ultimate battle is between those of us, mm-hmm. and I know that you and I are in the same place, and I think this is true of most conservatives, and by the mm-hmm. way, most American moderates, and indeed many liberals.
Right.
They understand the political structure, that the appropriate mm-hmm. political structure of the world are nation states, mm-hmm. are nation states with borders that have self-determination, in which decision-making is done through democratic processes. That's the way we understand it. We don't want small numbers of bureaucrats mm-hmm. somewhere controlling our destiny. That's right. Absolutely not what we right. want. What gives me hope is mm-hmm. that if you look at the elections that have been taking place in Europe, we're watching a huge revolt against globalization.
Exactly.
And I think that Trump is going to ride the crest of that same.
Yeah, well, a lot of that's happened anger. Because of Trump, too, you would agree.
Absolutely.
I mean, yeah, he's absolutely filtered over there. Yeah, we had an interesting talk the other day. You would enjoy, Stephen, with IQ Elrazuli out of Europe about, and for the first time in some years, by the way, I heard a jump in his step when he was talking about European politics. He'd been very abysmal, his talking about this prior, very dismal a feeling about it. But he was very encouraged because of many of the elections you just spoke about right there. You got to remember, too, people, that the United Nations, they have a different motive. You know, the UN is an absolute joke. You got to remember, this is an organization that we founded. We support, we pay it. We are their bitch child. We pay all their money. We do all their thing. And like Dr. Stanley just pointed out, they hate us, indeed. So they pick the people who they're sending to these various communities and what have you. And the UN is on a different trajectory here than we are. You know, we said years ago, we need to pull out of there and kill the organization, put a fork in it once and for all. You would agree with that,
absolutely.
Wouldn't you?
I would turn it over to middle-income housing.
There
in
you
New
go.
York, and free up
go.
A lot of parking spaces and
imagine what we could do with that.
Reservations at good restaurants.
Imagine what we could do with those dollars, my friend, that we put out there to these bozos in Brussels. You know, right?
They are bozos, and they're corrupt, mm-hmm. and they are in bed with some of our worst enemies.
How concerned should people be with that? The fact that they're not assimilating in our country.
They should be extremely concerned. You know, look, America has succeeded. In large measure, up until quite recently, because we made a vigorous undertaking that this culture made to Americanize people. Now, I'm remembering, but just as an indication of how much things have changed, I'm just going to go back a little bit of time. My father came to this country in 1922 in the middle of the Russian Civil War. He escaped the Russian Civil War, came here. He went through intensive English. We taught civics to immigrants. We don't teach it to our own kids. Our own kids couldn't pass the citizenship test, okay? Our own kids don't understand American democracy. It's terrifying. And you watch what goes on campuses and the contempt they have for First Amendment rights, the way speakers whom they don't agree with are assaulted or shouted down. You know, you see that we're losing these American values all around, but when immigrants came, well, first of all, you know, they went through Ellis Island. They had health checks. They had to show that they would not become wards of the state, that families would be fiscally responsible for them. And then they went to schools, and the schools emphasized becoming an American. They taught American history in an unapologetic fashion. It wasn't just all about slavery and racism. They taught, as I say, civics, which is the key, how your government works. And they did intensive English so much, and it worked so well.
And they're not doing that now. They're not doing that in Minnesota, no, Milwaukee, and Portland, I mean, and yeah, not doing it.
Within 4 years of my father's arrival, he went. He was a freshman at the University of Alabama.
Okay. It was different then.
It was different then because we made, you know something? When you give people stuff and you make no demands, it doesn't work. It's like when you don't teach, when you have bilingualism, instead of making people learn English, you're not doing them a favor. Right. You want to succeed in the society, you learn English. But we're not doing it. And in addition to that, they're more insidious forces at work.
Yeah, yeah. This is a real problem. This is a real problem. This assimilation problem.
Well, which particularly with this, you know, I hate, you know, I'll be accused of something here, but it's a particular issue with the Muslim population.
Oh, yeah.
There's no question. The loyalty is to the Ummah, the so-called worldwide community of the faithful.
That's right.
American policy, they despise American policy.
Oh, definitely.
And out of that community, you know, we've already seen a rise of jihadism, a radicalization process. It's going on, by the way.
But it's really with all groups, Stephen. It's with all groups, though. You know, it's happening everywhere. The Somalians, they've done it there, but they're doing it. The Africans are doing it. They're all doing it. They're all in these groups. The Hispanic, they're not assimilating. It's a different attitude today. People are bringing their nationalist views and their countries with them. That's what they're doing, right?
And they are, and to give you an example, which is maybe less frightening because we're not talking now about potential terrorists, but equally disturbing in the long run, is that if you look at, I was just looking at data about people, demographics and likely electors and all of that kind of thing. There had been a very weak movement among Mexicans with green cards. That is to say, people who are legally now working in America, who could be on a path to citizenship. They have shown no great interest in becoming American citizens. They're here, essentially, to make money, I believe, and then to go home to retire. Their primary love and loyalty is to Mexico. Mexico, by the way, because of Mexican law, they remain Mexican citizens all their lives. Even if they were to become American citizens, they would be dual citizens. Mm-hmm. Dual citizenship, by the way, is something I believe we should get rid of. But in any case, there's no great movement towards that, which is one reason, I think, in some case, this is a lion that is not going to roar for quite a while politically.
Right. And the problem is when you speak up about this, they then call you a racist or a xenophobe, you understand? So if you say anything about the groups you're speaking about, anything at all, you're a bad person because you want people to assimilate with American values. It's not real complicated, people. But as soon as you go against that, you're branded as a racist or a xenophobe, and that's what they've done very successfully. Now,
and what's so crazy, Malcolm, about that is, you know, what we're saying is we want you in our family. You know, we want you to join us. We want you to become one of us. We're not saying go away because you're different. We're saying your differences are fine, but the commonalities are more important.
Yeah, it's how they've branded it all. It's a brand. It's a brand they put out there, Stephen.
I went to do a little photo shoot on Ellis Island for the Center for Immigration Studies because I was informed that there was a new exhibition there. Now, a great deal of money has been given to Ellis Island just recently, about $45 million, to redo some stuff. And so, now, I don't know if this exhibition is still there, but it was a very substantial exhibition on the ground floor. And I go walking in, and now Ellis Island is sacred territory for me. This is where my family entered America. You know, I went to look up the ship that my father came in on. For so many Americans, Ellis Island has enormous sentimental value. What if this exhibition was about? It was saying that that we need to embrace, and part of this story is illegal immigration, and that we need, and there are explanation panels in that exhibit saying we need unskilled labor just as much as we used to, and when it shows people who are opposed to these crazy high levels of immigration, it shows people with Nazi flags and Ku Klux Klan outfits. This was obviously an exhibit paid for by someone on the far left, but the fact that it's sitting in a federal place in the national park, which is all about American immigration at, in its best form, is just, it just traduces, and it's an outrage. And people should know that, I mean, even there, look, I mean, I don't like, you know, when you read that poem by Emma Lazarus, which quite, I used to be a professor of literature. I never was partial to the poem. You know, I think maybe the Wretched Refuse didn't exactly like being called it. But you know what? That wasn't, that poem didn't have the force of law. It wasn't passed by the American
people. Well, what people don't realize is the poem was put on the plaque after the fact to pay for it. They don't understand that. So it's
exactly right. The French gave us the statue.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's
look, well, I'm anxious to, I'm happy to send the statue back to France. I've said that before on broadcast. I'll say it again. I'm happy to send it back. Seriously.
I think they wouldn't take it if that message were still on it.
Exactly my point here, because they don't want all those huddled masses in poor either, because France was being transformed as well. They're having their own problems out there, as well as Germany is, as England is, as Spain is, and Italy is, and all the European countries have been transformed. And they're in danger. They're in great, great danger here. You know, we start here, friends, today with how to transform a nation and how important this is for you to understand this. You've learned some things today, and I love having Dr. Stephen Steinlight on with me because he's able to pull out some of the things you're probably not going to hear elsewhere. The thing I want to have him back for a part two of this conversation is about our vote in districts. There's an underlying reason why a lot of this is happening, and it really is to transform a lot of the voting. And I've got proof of that exactly here in markets like Louisiana, North Dakota, South Dakota, and you've got areas like Alabama, West Virginia. A lot of these supposed red states or red districts are being transformed. There's a political movement in, and the influx of illegal aliens in these markets is absolutely staggering. Now, that begins, you begin to see now the motive involved here. There's a motive, and that's part of the motive. And then you have to understand what are the rest of the motives here. You know, what else is at stake here, first of all, you see? What are the stakes? We talk about globalists. Dr. Steinlight talked about the UN. He talked about all of that. And what are the stakes of that? Well, listen, I mean, there is, you can't put all of this in the globalist movement. I don't want to put all of this in the United Nations or globalists, because sometimes we tend to do that here as political conversation, and then we put everybody into these big boxes. I think there are a lot of people. There are some who want to win elections, and they'll do anything they can to win those elections. There are others who have evil thoughts in their minds, and that's the reason they do things. There are others who think a global organization would be a beautiful way to live life. There are a lot of reasons, is all I'm pointing out to you right now, as to why people do the things they do, why the political elites. Our job here, yours and mine and Dr. Steinlight's, is we've got to reach the middle of the road here. We have to reach Americans. We have to reach people that are the moderates. We have to reach people left of center. We have to bring our Democratic friends into this conversation. And people, we need to do it with open arms, because we've got to get them into understanding the facts or the data here. Too many of them have been brainwashed, and our country is in jeopardy. And I got to tell you what, this country is being transformed, and it will never come back again. And when people say, oh, the next election is important, every election is important, because you can transform this country in short order in just a matter of years. And it's been happening here in these previous administrations. So if this is an America you love, I suggest that you stand up and you invite your friends in. Invite them to this program, Voice of a Nation. You'll catch us every day at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network. Also, Morning Drive, the following morning, 8 a.m. You can hear all the conversation going on here, and there are some big talks happening here. It's time, friends, for all of us to get involved and get loud.